Hey, everybody. Usually we get right to the show, but tonight we had some breaking news that happened after we finished recording. So you're going to hear the full show coming up here in just a bit, but there was breaking news that happened just about 15 minutes after we got done recording the show. It is Connor Essejian entering the transfer portal. He says goodbye to Wisconsin after 2 years. Obviously, his first year averaged double-digit points, was 36% from three-point range, was on the All-Big Ten's freshman team, and things fell off for him, Jesse. And I think you'll hear in the show, because I'm not going to go back and take some of the stuff out, but we talked during the show that he's a guy that probably wants to play and probably wants to find some playing time. And it went down significantly for him this year. He didn't play against Illinois in the Big Ten tournament, did not play on Friday night, despite obviously their issues offensively. He's done.
This is certainly not a surprise. And he said all the right things. He was asked about it on multiple occasions during the season as his role continued to diminish. But what are you going to say at that point in time? Hey, as soon as the season's over, I'm going to hit the transfer portal. He did great work as a true freshman, really came on the scene, played at a level that I thought was higher than I certainly expected right out of the gate. Now, some of that was out of necessity, but showcased his three-point shooting. And if you project forward, you had to ask, and I'm sure this is the question he was asking, where are the minutes going to come for me at Wisconsin? You know, Max Klesman is coming back. You have John Blackwell who emerged, and we'll see what happens with AJ Storr. But he's somebody who I think has an opportunity to be a really high level scorer. It just didn't seem like it was going to be at Wisconsin. And I know there are Badgers fans out there who are going to be tremendously disappointed with this news because of his 3-point shooting capabilities and feel like Greg Gard, kind of punished him in ways that weren't befitting of his talent level. But again, you've got to play the players that he believes are going to give this team the best chance. And at least this season, he didn't see that role for Connor as much as he did the year before.
Obviously, the injury at the beginning of the season played a little bit of a role in him getting off to a bit of a slow start. But if you go back to the last 10 games of last year and the first 20 games this year, he was not a good shooter.
No.
It was sub 30% from three. It was not good. And so, like, you were able to overlook some of the defensive miscues last year because you needed his scoring, right? And he was hot. He was over 40% for a large stretch of the year. And then obviously that last 10 games kind of dipped him down. I think he ended up being right around 36. He just wasn't very good. And then he had a little bit of a stretch here this year where he hit some, but when he came in and played the way he did against Maryland, when the game was out of reach, it was out of reach, but he's just out there just chucking. I feel like that was as good of indication as any that he just did not give a crap and was going to go and get his at that moment. Like, he just didn't care. He was getting his minimal opportunities to play in a game, and he was going for it, and he did. I mean, the playing time just wasn't there for him. And you ask the question, like, you know, there's we'll see what happens with AJ Storr, but obviously John Blackwell and Max Klesman, and then you have Kamari McGee backing up Chucky, and you have Daniel Fritte coming in. I don't know where those minutes were going to be. Like, because Daniel probably is not going to play a ton of point guard. I guess we'll see. But I think he gives him another guy you can throw out there along with Kamari. But I think he could play off the ball too. Or as we saw in the tournament in the tournament game, Chucky was off the ball a little bit too. So I think those not interchangeable by any stretch, but I think he has the ability to come in and play with Chucky. It's not like he's going to be just a backup. He's the point. Like, you don't necessarily desperately need a point guard with this group.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes down to playing time, obviously. And we know that they had to have had some pretty hard conversations here about what the future looked like. And Connor just was not going to be a significant part of that. It seems he went from playing 27.4 minutes a game as a freshman to 7.3 minutes. And obviously he started 19 games a year ago, but you look and you say, well, what is his best trait? And it's 3-point shooting. And you're right. Had some really long stretches where he wasn't very good. And as a college player at this stage, he's a career 34.5% 3-point shooter. He only shot 30.3% this season. But I do think some of that comes with opportunity and more minutes. And I mean, I think he's going to be a fine college player, wherever he ends up, which presumably will be at a level that allows him to be a key contributor, if not a starter.
I mean, what he played minutes wise last year, I mean, he didn't play fewer than I mean, he played, had just one game where he's fewer than 14 minutes. And this year it was, he had, you know, one game or two games of over 14 minutes of action. And that was the blowout at Rutgers where he got to play a lot because John Blackwell didn't play. And then going back to Chicago State, obviously a blowout earlier in the year. Like, it's all the non-conference games that he essentially was in double figures minutes wise, you know, over the last month of the season where they were, I think it's fair to say, struggling. And it wasn't necessarily offensively struggling. It was defense and turnovers and that type of stuff. But he played 12 minutes against Purdue, 10 minutes against Michigan, 24 against Rutgers, and 10 against Ohio State, and then never played more than nine the rest of the way. They just did not use him. Do you think they should have used him more?
No, not really. I probably will get some flack from that from Badgers fans just because it's like, oh, well, look at his three-point shooting. But again, if that is your biggest strength and you're not doing it very well and you only have so many minutes to go around, the question then comes down to who are you going to take out if you're going to play Connor? And there were guys that were playing because they'd earned the trust of the coaching staff and you could rely on them more as two-way players. Let's just be real. If we're talking specifically about Max Klesmann and John Blackwell, defensively, you knew what you were going to get, and you were going to get their best effort and an effort that would be good enough on a consistent basis. So the minutes just weren't there. And I mean, Connor just ended up finding himself in a numbers game, and it's unfortunate for him and unfortunate for Badgers fans who really liked what he showed in stretches last season. But this is what the transfer portal is for in part, and hopefully he'll be able to find the right fit.
That is certainly the hope, and we'll see if it does manage out. We talk about this in the show further on. It was a question that came in via Twitter. It was about whether Greg Gard recruits to defense too much. And we kind of mentioned Milan down at Iowa State as a guy that, yeah, maybe they focused a little bit too much on defense. And again, they had in that class, it was Nolan Winter and Gus Yaldin, but they never offered Milan. So I think had they offered him, he would have been at Wisconsin. Instead, he's down at Iowa State, and Iowa State has come into Wisconsin. And again, I don't know if you steal Milan because you didn't offer him if you're Wisconsin, but Zamion Mitchell is going down there too. Iowa State has, and we all obviously know what they did with Tyrese Hunter, who ended up, I was going to Texas after he beat Wisconsin in the tournament. And obviously Tyrese Halliburton being down there too, they've kind of made it some, and in the coach, Osselberger is from Wisconsin, so it probably shouldn't be a huge surprise, but they have really cleaned up. But I go to why I'm saying this, and again, we talk about it later in the show, is Connor Asesian kind of even more evidence that he is not going full in on the offensive strategy? Like, you are going to have to still play some defense. And then if that is the case, well, AJ Storr wasn't exactly the greatest defender either.
Every player has strengths and weaknesses, and you're willing to make sacrifices for some players more than others because of what they can give you. So AJ Storr is going to give you 16 to 18 points a game. And if that comes with some defensive deficiencies, you can be more willing to overlook them. But
it's because they don't have another guy like him, right? They don't have another guy that they can. And when it comes to Connor, is what he going to give you that much better than John Blackwell and Max Klesmann? I struggle to see that.
And ultimately, that's why Greg made the decision in terms of the minutes that he gave, and they didn't go to Connor.
Yeah, I mean, that's, pretty simple. But again, we talk about a lot of this. So, when we talk about Connor and whether, you know, the guys potentially could go into the portal, well, he is now in the portal, and I don't think he'll be the last name that we hear headed that way. But we'll see how it plays out. All right, here's the rest of the show.
Breaking down Wisconsin basketball. This is The Swing with Zach Heilprin and Jesse Temple on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Yes, welcome in. It is a season-ending episode of The Swing. Badgers knocked out of the NCAA tournament by James Madison on Friday night. Play what I would consider one of their poor games, and that's saying something because they played some poor basketball in February, but really, really poor first half, really, really poor ability offensively. We'll get to all of it, Jesse. And then obviously looking ahead to next year, we never know exactly what's going to happen because the transfer portal and NIL and pay for play, that's all involved here now. And so guys coming and going, we'll see how it all plays out for Wisconsin and how Greg Gard continues to adjust. And I know there's a lot of people calling for Greg Gard's job. As of right now, he still has it. I don't think it's going to happen, but again, you just never know in this environment. I don't necessarily think you're firing a guy who's been to four of the last five NCAA tournaments and won a couple of Big Ten titles in that time. But Wisconsin's expectations under Bo Ryan got so high that that's kind of who you expect Wisconsin to be not on a regular basis, but challenge. And they now haven't been to the second week of the NCAA tournament since 2017. And so it was a tough ending, and it probably made a little bit tougher Sunday when Duke beat JMU by nearly 40 and didn't make Wisconsin look any better. I don't think that Wisconsin could look any worse. So I don't know, but you obviously did not have to watch that in person. I did. You're in Indianapolis, but you were able to watch it. Just initial impressions, what you saw last Friday, Jesse.
Yeah, I was covering some games here in Indy, but had the entire game up on the screen. And let's just be real candid here. It's not the fact that Wisconsin lost, which in itself is tremendously disappointing against a 12 seed, even though it's a James Madison team that won 30 plus games. It's the way Wisconsin played in this loss. Absolutely abysmal. And I am just stunned at the fact that this team, which had so much talent, which at one time was ranked sixth in the country in the AP Top 25, looked like it was completely unprepared and not in any way ready to meet the moment. And I'm not suggesting that they didn't practice or study or do everything in their power to try and get ready for James Madison. But for whatever reason, when they stepped on the floor and the ball was tipped, they looked like they had not played as a unit together all season. They turned the ball over 13 times in the first half, most turnovers in one half, I believe, all season, finished with 19 turnovers, and scored 20 points in that first half. And the thing is, it'd be one thing if you said, well, James Madison just shot the lights out. They were unconscious. They could not miss. No, they were not great offensively at all. And that should have been, if you have a poor start or a tough stretch, it should have been enough for Wisconsin to overcome it. And as I was watching, I kept thinking, well, the Badgers are going to make a run at some point. This can't be a double-digit game. And I think they cut it to six on a Klesmer three and just could not get any closer. There's no excuse for this. And I don't have a real good explanation as to how they could play this bad after what they just did in the Big Ten tournament, where they finally looked like they were rounding into the form that they showed for about a 2-month stretch earlier in the season. So that's my initial takeaway, is of all the teams that played in the first round that you thought maybe had a chance to do anything in this tournament, I can't think of one that played much worse than the Badgers. And I know you could say Kentucky against Oakland, but at least Oakland had a folk hero who made 10 three-pointers. James Madison did not have that. So it was just about as bad a performance as you could have envisioned, and I couldn't have envisioned it for Wisconsin.
Yeah, the things that, and Greg Gard said this afterwards, the things that hampered them in that February run, and actually pretty much all year, were turnovers and shot selection, and they both came home and just slapped Wisconsin in the face on Friday night. I mean, turnovers on four of the first five possessions, turnovers on seven of the first 12. JMU turned that into 12 of their first 15 points. For the game, as you mentioned, 19 turnovers, 27 points off those turnovers. The 19 turnovers were the third most under Greg Gard. The other two, the first game he ever coached, which came back in 2015 against UW Green Bay, when they turned it over 26 times and nearly blew a 20-some-odd point lead. And the other time, at Purdue in 2018, when they put up 20 turnovers, and that was the team that was obviously the worst of the Greg Gard era, that dealt with all the injuries, that didn't have Demetric Trice, didn't have Kobe King. It was just Brad Davison and Ethan Happ, essentially. And then that went on Friday night. And sitting on the floor, that close to it, James Madison just looked at a different pace. The way that they guarded Wisconsin was just at a different pace than anything I had seen to this point in this year. And it's the way that they heated him up. I don't think Wisconsin's seen a ton of that. I think maybe Rutgers in Piscataway did, or New Jersey, but it was just at a different level. And not helping matters was, they were not blowing anything. They were not calling fouls on anything. And so all the slapping at the ball that it leads to, you know, I think it was like 13 or 14 steals. Some of that was, you know, not necessarily a result of great defensive play. It was the refs allowing them to be physical. And you would think that that would bode well for Wisconsin, but it did not. They got pushed all over the place, and it led to all those turnovers. And you're right. I expected at some point Wisconsin would make a run. There were a couple of, there were two different moments here that I think kind of encapsulated the game itself. Was it was Wisconsin could have gotten within five with 5:54 left in the first half, and Tyler Wahl missed back-to-back layups. He had a horrible game offensively, like just horrible game. And he was, I mean, you go back to the Big Ten tournament, he wasn't much better there either. But he was, I mean, the missed layups, they went, I think, 8 for 18 on layups. Just horrendous. And maybe some of the speeding up led to that. So they had a chance to go within five if he had not been able to get one of those down. Instead, JMU closes on a 10-4 run and goes on with a 33-20 lead. And then in the second half, you mentioned the Max Klesmic, because Max Klesmic came in, kept him in the game, right? I mean, what he did in the second half, just really, I mean, he hit 5 3-pointers. He finished with 18 points. But there was a moment in that game. It was 52-46, and he had one go in and out. Like, it rimmed out. It felt like that may have been the momentum that they needed to perhaps push that game even further. Because the tighter it got, you would have thought that maybe JMU kind of clams up a little bit, even though they have been in close games. And then I think it was the next possession. He went in for a layup, and there was some contact there, but he missed the layup. JMU comes back down, gets a three, and all of a sudden it's, you know, it was done again, right? So they had their moments, but it just, the game itself was just, they looked overwhelmed. They looked overwhelmed, and it, you would sit there and say, like, oh my gosh, yeah, James Madison has this veteran team. Well, so does Wisconsin, you know, and they've played a ton of basketball together these last 2 years, and they just looked outmatched on the defensive end, or the offensive end, I should say. For them, they could not figure anything out. It was a tough game to watch for them. So they do finish the season, what was it, 22-13, I believe. It
14
is not
that one.
What do you say, 14?
Yeah.
Yeah, 22-14 on the year. When we look back at this year, how will you remember it?
That is really, it's a good big picture question, and I think the right one to be asking at this point. In some respects, you can look at it and say, well, they did what they needed to do, meaning they missed out on the NCAA tournament a year ago. They went and got AJ Store from the portal. They played really good basketball for 2 months, as well as any team in the country. And so they made the NCAA tournament. But it's just, it's hard not to look at the failure in the NCAA tournament as a large part of how you define what a season was, in a season that didn't feature a Big Ten regular season championship or a Big Ten tournament championship. And I realized the Badgers made it to give some people optimism going into the NCAA tournament. So it was a good season, but obviously nowhere near a great season. And it's just hard not to let what happened against James Madison, that really kind of puts a damper on things.
That's usually the case, right? Isn't it?
It is.
And that's maybe what March is.
Yeah. I mean, I just, college basketball is so different from college football, at least until we get a 12-team, 14-team, 16-team playoff, right? Like, yeah. Most teams aren't going to be vying for a national championship, but you can still feel okay about the team if they play better down the stretch and they win a bowl game. Okay. But the NCAA tournament, all these teams are in this pool for one national championship, and so you are defined by what you do there. And it just, the way they played so poorly, I think leaves a bitter taste all around. And I said this on the last show, Zach, but there, as soon as this draw came out, I felt, I mean, my words were, oh, shoot. And it wasn't shoot for just what I thought Wisconsin was going to do. If they were going to beat James Madison, they were still going to have to play Duke. But I didn't feel particularly good about this game. And the thing that I looked at, and I've looked at this a lot of the times, like when you get a mid-major team that's won 30 plus games, I think that matters so much. And James Madison beat Michigan State earlier in the season. And I know McNeese was a 30 plus win team and did not win its first round game. And I also know that a lot of James Madison's wins were quad four opponents. And so some people were debating the merits of them even being in the NCAA tournament. But I just feel like a team that comes into a tournament with three losses, that stuff matters. And they played like it. And Wisconsin just looked like they didn't show up for a large part of it. So it's a good season, but it's not I just can't view this as a really successful season for Wisconsin basketball because, like you said, this is now 7 years that Greg Gard hasn't made it out of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, and we know one of those NCAA tournaments didn't happen. But still, that is a mark on Wisconsin and Greg Gard, and I think it's something that they've got to be able to overcome.
I mean, they've got two tournament wins since they went to the Sweet 16,
Yeah.
right? I mean, and again, I know the 2020 season, and we have to mention it, and I'm actually in favor of mentioning it. I think you can tell the story of Greg Gard's tenure without mentioning it because of what Wisconsin was in March of that year, and the way that they were playing, the way that they were feeling about themselves, and the ability to go and maybe make a deep run in the Big Ten tournament, but also a deep run in the NCAA tournament. Unfortunately, we don't get to wonder, or I should say, we don't get to know what would have happened. So, but the fact is, what we do know is two wins and since 2017. So that is tough to overcome because that's March as well, right? Like that, like we talk about in college football, there's so much more to it than just the last game of the year. When it comes to college basketball, the last game of the year, every team. I guess I should say it. Other than the NIT winner and the CBI winner, the NCAA tournament as well. So you have three teams that don't win, that don't lose their last game. The other 300 plus all lose their last game. And a lot of people will focus on that last game. And for Wisconsin, it was a horrible performance. And so I think, yeah, when you look back at this year, it's going to be the fact that they went and underachieved. They did. Not based on what the expectations were before the season, even though I think we both said get to the NCAA tournament and perhaps make the second round is maybe the goal. But when you get to where you were, sixth in the country and 8-1 in Big Ten play, and you flame out against a 12 seed, however good that 12 seed is or not, that's how the season's going to be remembered. So when you say it was a good season, I'll say it's a fair season. But the last month, take away three games in Minnesota, which again, you can't do because of what the way that they played, but they didn't actually then take that momentum into the next week. They went resorted back to what they had been for 6 weeks before that. And so I think fair, but when it comes down to it, it's a failure in March.
Yeah, no question about that. And expectations do change. They're fluid. And when Wisconsin was 16-4 and sixth in the country, nobody envisioned them closing 6-10 the rest of the way. And this also comes on the heels of a season 1 year earlier where Wisconsin was 14th in the AP top 25. And then we know there were injuries to Tyler Wahl and Max Klesmont, but never won consecutive games the rest of the way. So every season is part of the story of a program and a coaching tenure. But those are the last two that we have to go on. And Wisconsin just has to be better. And I know this is going to lead into big picture questions, but when you've got an athletic director talking about, at least at the football level, trying to compete for championships, the basketball program is in that same conversation. And it's not that the Badgers are not able to compete with any team in the country. It's just how consistently can you do it? And right now, they're not doing it at a consistent enough level to obviously be able to do something special. And I think that's how, at a program like Wisconsin, that's how things are defined in terms of this being going in a positive direction. Because Wisconsin is not a team that, like, this isn't 1994, obviously. This hasn't been 47 years where they haven't been to the NCAA tournament, and just getting there is victory enough, like it has been for a program like Northwestern for so long. This is Wisconsin, where obviously under Bo Ryan, they weren't just getting in, they were advancing, and right now Wisconsin is not able to do that.
I still think a healthy majority of the Big Ten would take what has happened at Wisconsin over the last since going back to since Greg Gard took over, right? Like I still think there's a healthy majority. I actually went through the names last night because I was having this conversation over text, and I was putting the names down, and I almost included the new teams, but it's kind of irrelevant. So I just did the current 14 teams, and I it's at least half, and probably a healthy majority of the half would take what Wisconsin has done since Greg Gard took over: two Sweet 16s, two Big Ten championships in the tournament, 6 of the 8 years that there was a tournament would have been in it, 7 of 9. Like those are things that most of the Big Ten would have taken and run with. Unfortunately, that's not where Wisconsin. I shouldn't say unfortunately. Unfortunately for Greg, not even unfortunately for Greg Gard, because he's able to recruit and get stuff off of that, those expectations and what this program is and can be. but he's also judged by them. And when you've done those things, especially in these last five seasons, when you've done a lot of that stuff, you just haven't had success, then when it matters the most, people are going to be calling for your job. And that's exactly what has happened online and in my my DMs and my texts and everything like that. Again, as I said at the open of the show, I don't think that is where Chris McIntosh is at, but I also don't think it's something you can totally throw out because of his what he did with the football program. And again, I know what happened with the football program is probably is significantly different because of what the situation was. Like, there had been a clear decline from 2019 to where things were in 2022. And the fact that he was not willing to make changes kind of forced the hand there. This one, Greg Gard has made changes. He is continuing to make changes. He understands it's an offensive game more now than ever before. And that's why he went out and got AJ Storr. It's why he allowed Kirk Penny to do what he's done with this offense. And I think it's going to continue to evolve. But when it comes down to it, you got to win games in March. And they haven't been able to do that in tournaments. And, you know, it is a matchup base. And that's what Greg Gard will tell you. It's kind of a crapshoot. That's fine. But you have to have success. You do. I understand it's a crapshoot. But when you have been here, or been in it that many times and unable to get to the second weekend, that's not going to be good enough at Wisconsin. So I don't know how many more years he would get. I think, you know, again, I don't have a voice, and that's a very good thing for a lot of people. But I would just say, I think next year you have to produce, especially if the roster, and we're going to talk about this in a second here, if the roster looks somewhat similar to the way it did this year, you have to be able to have success with that type of veteran group.
I would agree 100%. And he's won 63.5% of his games. He's won
how many in March?
About 60% of his games in the Big Ten.
He's 6-6 in the NCAA tournament.
And that's exactly the dichotomy here is.
And 2-4 with his own guys.
You know, really good regular season coach, but you are judged on the postseason too. And I mean, I don't know which one has more importance. Well, if you're competing to win championships, then you've got to put yourself in position to succeed in the postseason. So I'm not in the camp of Wisconsin needs to make an immediate change or anything like that. You're right. They've had more success than most programs. It is challenging in part because Bo Ryan is the greatest Wisconsin basketball coach based on everything that he accomplished. And it's hard to follow that act. Yes, it's hard to follow that act, but you got to be able to string some things together here in March. And I also think that if you are find yourself in a spot where you get the bulk of your returning production coming back and you add someone like a Daniel Freitag, who just capped a spectacular senior season with a state championship in Minnesota and presumably is the future at point guard after Chucky Hepburn and maybe see some minutes. Like, if you have all that talent back and you still can't produce, and that's three straight seasons like that, I think the conversations are much different.
So let's move this forward here and look at next year. We know that every player except for Tyler Wahl has the option to come back for another year at Wisconsin. That will not end up being the case. I can promise you that the entirety of that roster is going to come back. We certainly have the unknown of AJ Storr, who told, well, he was asked a number of times by different reporters, but I believe it was Evan Flood from 24/7 who actually asked him, is Madison or the NBA the only options? And he wouldn't commit to those being the only options. So there is a chance that, you know, they could lose him to the transfer portal, go somewhere else. I think it'd be beneficial for him to stay at Wisconsin and stay with the same program for more than, you know, 1 year. How many different high schools did he go to? Obviously spent the 1 year at St. John's before coming to Wisconsin. I think it'd be a benefit to him, but I also understand it from a him perspective. Like, and I know in his mind, he thinks he's an NBA player, but I think you make as much money as you possibly can at this point. I know people are going to be like, that sucks. This is college athletics, but it's also the reality of the situation. You have to go and make as much as you possibly can right now, because who knows how much you have that chance later on in life. I'm not saying that's what AJ Storr is doing. I'm just saying if that's in his mind, it's hard to criticize him. It's the situation that we find ourselves in college athletics right now, is that there is an ability to pay whatever you want. There's pay for play. There's NIL opportunities. You can do whatever you want with that stuff. You can transfer as many times as you want. That's the situation that they're in, and that's obviously tough for Greg Gard. But if they were to lose AJ Store, then finding someone like AJ Store becomes a priority, and then also finding someone to be a stretch four, which they haven't had in feels like quite some time, to go along with that lineup that you would assume is going to include Steven Crowell and Chucky Hepburn and Max Klesmit. And if, there's going to be changes behind him. But I think that, to me, like, that may be the key to the offseason is if AJ Store is going to go to the NBA or go somewhere else, find a similar player, because we know that offense needs to have a player like that, maybe a little bit more an efficient one, if we're being picky. And then, obviously, another forward in general that you can put next to or put up there with Steven Crowell.
AJ Store just needs to do more commercials and advertisements for pin seekers.
it's funny. I mean, I feel like I've seen the commercial. I've seen Connor Asigian more in the commercial than on the court, like the last half of the season. So, hey, teach his own.
The landscape is so different now that you obviously can't fault the player for doing what he feels is best, because NIL and the limitless transfer situation changes everything. Before, it would be unheard of for someone who just transferred in to then leave, because you'd have to sit out. And from a basketball perspective, purely from a basketball perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense for him to stay at Wisconsin and develop another year and improve on the areas that he struggled in this year and become a better NBA prospect. Like, he flourished this year. He did everything that I think he wanted to do and that Wisconsin coaches believed he was capable of doing, coming from his freshman season at St. John's. And he's not going to get worse. He's going to be an even bigger component to that offense next season and presumably become better defensively. However, that NIL component is undeniable. And we know, I mean, obviously you can't report on everything that you hear, but I know that players in football and basketball get offered certain amounts of money from schools, and that's not even necessarily allowed because they're still at the school. So, you know, those kinds of conversations are being had just in general. I'm not speaking specifically about this particular situation, but if there's a school out there that's willing to offer a significantly more amount of money, and you feel like you can put yourself in the same type of position where you can be a go-to scorer and position yourself well for the NBA, you have to entertain that. So there's a lot of options on the table, certainly for AJ. I personally would be surprised if he ends up staying in the NBA draft. Like, we know a lot of guys, they test the waters, as it's called. You go to some of the pre-draft stuff, you get good feedback and realize, oh, this is where they think I am. I'm going to go back to college and play well and put myself in a better spot. So that would surprise me. But all these other schools that can come in are going to come in for a player like that who wouldn't want a wing who can just give you instant offense. So there's a lot to consider, and there's a lot of other guys who I think have some really big decisions to make about, is Wisconsin the place for me or can I go somewhere else? Not based on an NIL situation, but I just want to get on the court and play. And there's some guys who are capable of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously talking about Connor probably the most, right?
There. Yeah, and I mean, yeah. Gus Yeldon, like, I don't know what's going to happen with that situation.
Well, yeah. I mean,
he is a scholarship player, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think you'll see him on the floor at Wisconsin, Jesse?
Gun to my head, no.
Okay, all right, gun to your head. All right. That's fine. I think that's all I wanted to ask. I'm going to throw in some of the Twitter questions as we're talking about this here. And I wanted to throw this in because I think it's a worthwhile question just because we're talking about AJ Store and whether he might go elsewhere. But Gator says, do you think AJ Store ever bought into being a Badger?
Yeah, I do.
So do I.
I think it would be unfair to say he came here and wasn't fully invested. Like, all those guys worked their butts off and he had a really good season for them. But you're not in season anymore and you got some important decisions to make.
How many guys, this is from Eric, how many guys would you expect to leave? And I know that's tough. I know you hate doing that with football. It's probably it's a little bit more difficult with basketball, or I should say it's kind of similar with basketball, because you don't want to just say, oh yeah, this guy's gone, he's eventually going to be gone. But it feels like certain guys probably deserve more time, and whether it's their choice or whether it's kind of Wisconsin, like, you know, this probably isn't going to work for you, that type of thing. I would expect a host of guys to be off the team.
It's easier to speculate in basketball because you have 13 scholarship players. Like, there's 85 scholarships in football. And you can't know. And I'm not saying you know in basketball, but you look at the playing time, you look at who's coming back, presumably, and you see, well, where are the minutes going to be available? And that's not always the end all be all. I mean, there's a number of, at least from the football side, players I've talked to over the years who aren't playing, and you ask if they're going to transfer, and they just kind of look at you like you're nuts because they love being at Wisconsin. And you get that with basketball too. But like, let's just look at it. Okay. I think there's at this point would be 14 scholarship players for 13 scholarship spots. So like the math doesn't fully add up, but you've got Daniel Freitag and Jack Robinson coming in. So there's two scholarships. You know, obviously Gus Yaldin. So maybe there's one, but Nolan Winter and John Blackwell, who I expect to be big pieces to the puzzle here. And then the real ones, I think that, you know, you've got, I mentioned Gus Yaldin, but in that junior class, Connor Seagen, AJ Storr, Chris Hodges, guys who are currently on scholarship. I also just look at the senior class and think if those guys, I would expect them to come back. I don't know where else they would necessarily go. You've got Chucky Hepburn, Kamari McGee, Max Klesmit, and Stephen Kralov both said they'll be back. And then Marcus Over and Carter Gilmore, who was put on scholarship a couple years ago, if all those, if he's still on there. I mean, that's 14 scholarship guys for 13 spots. But I do think you look at some of the players and ask, well, where the minute's going to come from or what does their future look like? And maybe they're not necessarily around. But again, as of this moment, it's speculation.
It is. Like, Connor may love Wisconsin. He may be fine with that. He seems like a guy that wants to play. When I was asking AJ Storr what his plans were, Connor was like staring, like he was in his locker right next and just like staring to see what he was going to say, as if like they don't already know what the plan is. The way that AJ Storr like kissed the floor and all that stuff, like, I mean, I a lot of signs pointing towards him not being here, but I'm not going to make that assumption at this point. But I think there's going to be some holes to fill. And the guys that we, you know, we're saying, oh yeah, need to add a four, need to add this. I think Wisconsin already has some ideas of some of the guys that they would want to bring in. And one of them is a very familiar name for Chucky Hepburn. And that is Frankie Fiddler, who is one of the top guys in the portal right now. He's a forward. He's been at Omaha. He played with Chucky in high school. He's a guy that averaged over 20 a game, 6 rebounds and nearly 3 assists, shot 45% from the field. And I think he was at 35% from 3. That would be, I mean, that'd be a perfect fit. And I know that Wisconsin is involved there. And obviously Chucky is going to be involved there. If you go and look at Frankie's Instagram, he posted a photo with him and Chucky and another teammate that could potentially be in the portal at some point with question marks all around it. So I think Wisconsin is going to be involved there for sure. But I think there's going to be other names as we get through the rest of this month. There'll be more names to pop up and more possibilities. And certainly Wisconsin is going to lose their fair share as well. Right.
I would expect that to be the case just because this is the nature of college basketball right now.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So if, I guess we don't know what the roster is going to look like, but how much more this is from John, how much more should we expect from the same roster next year? And again, it's not going to be the same roster, but a lot of the core pieces with Chucky and Max and Stephen Crowell are all likely going to be there.
Well, I think AJ Storr is a big piece to this puzzle because we saw what this team was like last year without a guy like AJ Storr. They went 9 minutes plus in the NIT semifinal game without scoring. That would be a massive hole to fill. But, and I don't want to say just because you have experience means you're going to be better. We've seen over the years that doesn't always necessarily translate. But I do have a lot of belief in that core group. I mean, Chucky had some great moments this season. I think he was a better all-around player. Max Klesmit that's one tough dude, man. And he is the only one, it felt like, who showed up in that NCAA tournament game.
Shot nearly 40% from 3 for the year. That is something that they probably need to use more of next year.
Yeah. I have confidence in that group, but like, there's also a part that goes, until you prove it in those huge moments, you just wonder. I do know that sometimes if you have a core group back and they go through maybe a situation like this, it can make you better for the next year. But this core group came back from last year and could not get beyond the first round this year. So it's just so hard to say. And again, the roster could look substantially different with some of those other pieces to the puzzle.
Badger Beatdown says, is guard too focused on defense when recruiting? It seems like not enough players on the team that can get a bucket. What would the offense have been this year without Store? Not great. It wouldn't have been great, but they knew that they needed a guy like that. So that's why they went out and got him. And so they understood that they were not good enough last year offensively. That's why they went out there and got him. But I think the criticism about the recruiting, you know, and not recruiting guys that are good enough defensively, I think that holds up. Like I would agree that they do. I mean, go and look at what Milan Momcilovic at Iowa State is doing. Yeah. And in the tournament, you're telling me Wisconsin couldn't use that, especially as and Greg has said that it is changing more to an offensive game. Like the inability to take charges and just the NCAA's want to push the points up is leading to it being a whole big favorite, or I should say favoring the offense. Like it's hard to play defense these days. And a guy like Milan would have been perfect for it. But they didn't do it because, first of all, I thought he was a bit of a tweener. And second, defensive concerns. But that's the name of the game is offense. And he is one of those guys that stands out and be like, yeah, he should have been at Wisconsin.
Yeah, he's gone for, in his last four games, 11 against Baylor in the Big 12 semi, 18 in that blowout against Houston. Then he went for 19 in the first round and 10 against Washington State in the last round. So he's playing really good basketball. In general, I know I've talked about this a couple times, but obviously Greg feels like they'll be able to do a lot more offensively next season with the fact that they've got Kirk Penny in place for an entire offseason. On the other hand, I also wonder, well, that only makes a difference if you've got very talented offensive players. I mean, obviously you can put your players in position to score and succeed based on the spacing of the floor, but they've got to be able to finish the deal. And if you've got everybody back, you're going to need everybody to be a little bit better in that capacity. I'm really interested in Freitag. I mean, I don't know exactly what that looks like at the college level, but a very good scorer at the high school level. But I think that's part of what the transfer portal is for. Kind of like how Barry Alvarez used to say the walk-on program were considered the erasers for recruiting mistakes. It's not exactly the same in basketball, but you can fill an immediate hole just like we saw with AJ Store by getting the right type of portal player. And I think that's something that Wisconsin is going to continue to have to utilize, assuming there is room in the scholarship count.
All right, a few more here. Megan says, in my opinion, a lot of the guard criticism is overblown, but something I'd agree with is that players don't seem to improve from year one to year four or year five like they did under Bo Ryan. Do you think the blame falls for that more on the players or on the coaches?
I just don't know if I entirely agree with that premise. I feel like over the years, this has been debunked and every player is different. I mean, I don't know, like Johnny Davis may not be the best example, but he was a
Stephen Crowell.
And then he turned into, yeah, Stephen Crowell. I mean, would you say
think he is?
Yeah.
Like, has he made huge jumps, do you think? That we were kind of used to seeing with whether it was Frank Kaminsky or Jarrett Bergeron or John Luehr or, you know, Brian Butch, go on down the list of bigs that were, you know, much better players later in their career than they were early in their career. And he was, again, he was asked to start a little bit earlier than normal, but would you say that he's made significant jumps?
He didn't make a big enough leap from last season to this season. If we're talking just about him and not using him as an indictment on the entire Greg Gard regime. Like, no, I mean, how many times have we been talking about, and he'll even address the fact that he needed to be more aggressive, assertive player. And there were games where it just felt like he disappeared. He ended up averaging fewer points than he did a year ago. His rebounds went up a little bit. Now the point thing, I can understand, like you bring in a guy like AJ Store and he's taking a lot of shots and points, but no, he didn't make the jump that you would want to see. And Badger fans have to hope that there will be much more in the tank for next season. Frank Kaminsky is obviously in a league of his own, but we know Bo did a really good job of developing players, particularly big, so that by the time they were upperclassmen, it felt like they were as good as anybody in the league.
But here's also the thing, like who was actually, and Bo was there, right? But who were some of the guys that were behind the scenes working on that?
In terms of the assistant coaches?
Yes. Like, Greg Gard was there. I'm not giving, I'm not saying that he deserves the credit for it, but he was there working with the guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously same goes with Howard Moore and Gary Close and, you know, Rob Jeter. Like, those guys did a lot of work too. Like, Bo, I'm not saying Bo didn't have a role with it, but there were, you know, other aspects to it as well. And I also think, look, there is also the strength aspect of it too. Like, they got out physical the other night, Jesse. Like, I think that is pretty, I thought that was pretty obvious, and maybe you disagree, but I thought that was significantly a big part of the other night. Now, again, the officials let them get away with it, and that's fine. But like, Wisconsin, it didn't feel like Wisconsin had any way to fight. It didn't feel like they were in the same building mindset wise of fighting back off of that.
As you've been talking, I've been trying to think, and not succeeding. Who are the guys that we would say developed the best since Greg Gard became a head coach? And I can't really remember all the players. I mean, you know, Tyler Wahl this season was basically the Tyler Wahl that we saw the last couple of years, except this year his field goal percentage was way better than it was last year because he wasn't dealing with an injury.
Like the last four games, he turned into last year Tyler Wahl. Like, it was, especially on Friday night, like the missed layups, it felt like he had the yips.
Yeah, not an ideal way to close your career. But the overarching thing is, I don't know how fair it is to say that players just aren't better by the time they're done, or like seniors from where they're freshmen under Greg.
I think everyone, like, I think all these guys are better. I just don't know that they made the huge leaps that maybe we had seen in the past. And I think it's also worth saying that not everyone that came into the program under Bo made those same leaps too. Like, it's not like every single player, every single big that came in was so much better and was like an all Big Ten type of player by the end of their tenure. That's certainly not the case either. But I think Stephen Crowell has more to his game than what they're getting out of him. And I think he has to own that a little bit, right? Like, I think that, and he's admitted it, like being more aggressive. They're all over him to be more aggressive. Like, how do you get a guy who's not naturally aggressive to be more aggressive? How do you I mean, is that coaching?
It's got to be. There has to be something innate within you. I mean, yes, the coach's responsibility is to draw the best out of you, but you have to have something within yourself. And the thing is, there have been games where he has been that dominant guy. It just hasn't been consistent enough. So I know we're just kind of sticking to this one guy, but it's one guy that they need him to be that type of player for the all Big Ten type of player that Greg has said he believes Stephen's capable of for Wisconsin to take that next step.
I think there's a lot of people like, get rid of Stephen Crowell. I think if Stephen Crowell went into the portal, he'd be sought after.
Oh,
I don't know.
Contact him.
Yeah. Like, I don't know about like highly, highly sought after, but he would be sought after. There would be plenty of teams asking to have Stephen Crowell. And I know people are like, yeah, well, go ahead, take him. We don't care. Stephen Crowell is a starting center on a Big Ten team and deserving of it. We saw what he can do last weekend against some very good competition. And so that's the type of player I think he can be. The player that he was on Friday night, he got off to a great start. I think he had 8 points in the first 5 minutes, finished with 10 points and 11 rebounds. He wasn't able to keep it up, but that's just one game. I think what we saw of him from the Big Ten tournament is the guy that he can be. It's just, how do you get that to be on a consistent basis? And maybe another year getting stronger, another year of college ball will do that. I don't know. I think that's obviously what Wisconsin is hoping. But if he were to enter the portal, he would be sought after. And I also think his presence here is hurting their ability to bring somebody else in to back him up too. Like, everyone talks about having a backup five, and Nolan Winter was forced into that this year because they didn't have anybody else. There are so few Chris Vogts in this world that would be willing to come and sit behind somebody like that. You know what I mean? And give them great minutes off the bench. Like, there are so few people like that that would be willing to do that. I don't know that there's any team in the country that necessarily would be able to get a guy like that, knowing that there's not necessarily a competition for playing time at his position.
If you're entering the portal, largely it's because you're not satisfied with your current situation. And in a lot of those cases, it's because you're not playing as much as you want to. So the last thing you want to do in a lot of cases is go somewhere where you know you're not going to play very much. I know that's how I would approach the situation if I decided to enter the portal. So It's a great point that you make, but it's Greg's responsibility to fill out this roster in the fashion that is going to get this team to be as good as it can be. So if you can't get help there, you got to get help in other places.
I know it's not ideal, and they would want to be playing right now. I get that. But last year, obviously going through the NIT the way that they did, getting a few extra weeks of the season was good for them. But now that it's over, they can strictly focus on the portal and also figuring out what they want to do with the guys that are on their roster right now, too. I asked Greg about it last week because the portal opened on the 18th. I think we talked to him on the 19th, and he gave me a big, like one of those when I asked about it because I laughed because like I totally understand it. Like that's just the way that the calendar is working nowadays. Who's focusing on this? And they said they have a big group text message among the coaching staff and key personnel of when a guy of note goes into the portal, it gets sent around and they're managing it. And he did not, however, talk to any of his own guys at that point, wasn't going to do it until after the season because he wanted them to focus on Friday night's game about what their plans are for next year. Now, if they had wanted to come to him and talk about it, yes, but he said he hadn't had any talks with his own guys at that point. I would assume by this point, we're doing this Sunday night. They played Friday night, probably back yesterday, that they got to work right away on determining who's in, who's out, what needs to happen for certain guys to stick around, whether they want certain guys to stick around. Like all that plays into, I think, what they're going through right now. Oh, there was one I wanted
yeah,
to just,
I don't,
go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, like, I don't know that you can win your season at this time of the year, but I kind of feel like you can lose your season at this time if you put yourself in an absolutely terrible position. So you'd better believe the conversations have already started because this is as crucial a time as any stretch. And frankly, it's probably the most crucial non-basketball stretch because it's one thing with high school recruiting. Okay. They've got two guys coming in. You spend months, if not years, developing those relationships. Everything with the portal and NIL and all that stuff happens so quickly that you've got to be fully prepared and invested. So yes, this is the most critical time of year, as far as I'm concerned, outside of the actual games.
A lot of people were talking about the 7 years without a Sweet 16 and how it's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that? I agree with that. But the idea of unacceptable, like, am I going to fire the coach because of that? No. But I think that there has to be progress made into next year. But I would agree. Like, at Wisconsin, going 7 years between that is not acceptable. And then I look and see Illinois hadn't been to the Sweet 16 in 19 years.
Yep.
Until they got there this weekend. That kind of is crazy to me that it's been 19 years. And obviously, Brad Underwood has been a much better coach than John Grosch. But it took him a little bit here, even with some of the guys that he's had. I mean, the DeSumos and what was the big guy's name? The big center's name.
Kofler.
Yeah. Kofler. Did not get to the second weekend. It's not easy. It's not easy, but I do think it's something that should happen more than once every 7 years.
Yeah.
And, or if you're going between, I mean, it'll be, once in 8 years, if they were to make it next year. I don't think that's great. And especially at Wisconsin, I think the expectations are higher than that.
Yeah, I think it's a couple different things. It is through the lens of what Wisconsin has been and what it should be. And that is the number one thing here. So I get the comparisons to other teams and it makes a lot of sense. And also, I know Badgers fans don't want to hear about that. Like, Wisconsin has been good enough and has the talent and therefore should be able to do it. But there is something to be said from the macro lens of this about how hard it actually is to do that. And I want to say that without trying to make excuses for Gard in Wisconsin, because they should have gotten there at some point in the last 7 years. But I'm obviously in Indianapolis, and the game that I happened to cover earlier in the day was Marquette beating.
We all saw the story.
I know. No one
listened. I bet you a lot of people listening to this read it too.
So I want to preface by saying, I know no one gives a crap on a Wisconsin basketball podcast about me talking about Marquette, but I'm only bringing that up because I was around it for this weekend. And that's a program that hadn't been to a Sweet 16 in 11 years. Obviously, they went through Buzz Williams leaving and Steve Wojciechowski not making it through until they hired Shaka Smart. But Shaka Smart, who's this great basketball mind and obviously had a great run at VCU, just got to his first Sweet 16 in 13 years. And he had this stint at Texas where they never got there. So I think there's also some perspective that's worthwhile here about there are a lot of other good coaches and teams that have not been able to get to that Sweet 16. But I also understand Badgers fans don't necessarily want to hear that, especially knowing that that was something that happened a whole heck of a lot more under Bo Ryan, and you feel like they ought to be able to do it more under Greg Gard.
Well, I think it's because some of the losses, like he, again, going, if you want to go back to their last times in the Sweet 16, they should have been through in both of those games, right? I mean, the way that they fought against Florida and just be in the situation they were and then to have Chios do what he did, that's a game that you feel like you should have won. That's just a ridiculous shot. The Notre Dame one, turning it over twice where you did late when you had a lead, that's tough. That's tough. But some of these other losses, one was to a one seed in Baylor, who went and won the national championship, I believe, that year. The others, a 12 seed in Oregon, a 7 seed in Iowa State, at essentially in a home game, and yep, to a 12 seed in James Madison. Those are ones, like, I think people can deal with the loss to a Baylor, right? I think people can deal with that. I think it's the losses to lower seeded teams where your team just does not show up. They did not show up against Oregon. They obviously lost Chucky early in that game against Iowa State, but it's not like they were playing great to begin with that day. And then on Friday night, it was just a horrendous performance all around for everybody not named Max Klesman. Like, those losses and the way that it happened, I think makes it harder for people to accept keeping Greg Gard, right? Like, I think that's kind of where a lot of people are coming from. It's not just simply because they lost. It's the way and who they lost to.
Yep. I'll go back to what I said at the outset. That's exactly how I felt about this James Madison game. You wouldn't have been pleased if they lost, but the way that they lost, like looking like a team that was just a deer in the headlights, is totally unacceptable for where this program is supposed to be.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a few more I want to get to here, maybe. Oh, you were not there, but I'll take this one anyways. Wisco Inferno wants to know, who hated playing in Brooklyn more, you or the players? And I would just say I did not hate Brooklyn. I didn't at
That's
all.
That's because you were there for like 6 hours because they lost so early.
Well, I mean, I was there for 3 days. All right. Okay. I was there for 3 days. I actually liked a lot of stuff about Brooklyn. I liked the fact that I was able to walk to the arena. I liked the fact that I was able to walk to the grocery store. I was able to, like, you could walk. Living in New York, you can walk wherever the hell you need to walk. It's crazy. I think I'd lose a lot of weight if I lived in New York, just doing all the walking that I now drive for. But there's a ton of really good stuff about Brooklyn. So I'll just say that. I did not hate Brooklyn. The only part I did not, the biggest part I didn't like about the trip was getting from the airport to Brooklyn. It was ridiculously expensive. And I know that there's gonna be like, why don't you take the subway? Why don't you take this? Why don't you take that? Leave me alone. All right. I'm going to bitch about that, and you're going to have to live with it. The guys, I don't think they minded playing there either. I think it was the fact that the traffic trying to get from where they were staying, which was in Times Square out to Barclays Center, out to Brooklyn, you know, it's not ideal. But what happens in the situation is there was only so many hotels in Brooklyn that could handle teams, and the NCAA, or I think it was the A-10 is the one that hosted it, was like, these certain hotels are going to make it and be able to handle this, and others aren't. So we're going to put you somewhere else. And the seats that were the highest seats got the hotels closest to the arena. So that was UConn and that was Duke. Like, those were the two teams that were closest and had the highest, you know, were the highest seated ones. And then everyone else essentially got put out in Manhattan, and the traffic, not ideal. And then I had other people telling me, oh, why didn't they take the subway? Why didn't they jump on a subway to get to Barclays Center? Because there's a station that pops up right at Barclays Center. Do people not realize that there's a lot more that goes into it than just the 13 guys like putting their stuff on and getting on like all the equipment, all the other people that come along with it? Like, they have to be on there too. It'd be hilarious. And maybe there's a team that does it. I don't know. But I feel it'd be kind of hilarious to see a basketball team that's playing the NCAA tournament jumping on a subway and just intermingling with the rest of New York to get to Brooklyn. I think that'd be kind of funny. And people in Brooklyn, in New York, I feel like they're great, but they also feel like everyone should know exactly how to get around the city like they do. And we don't. So again, I didn't mind Brooklyn whatsoever. I would have preferred Indianapolis or Omaha just because it's closer and that type of stuff. But I didn't mind Brooklyn at all. At all.
All this talk about walking around Brooklyn has just got me thinking of when P. Diddy made those dudes on making the band to walk from Midtown Manhattan to Brooklyn for a slice of cheesecake. So, I mean, at least you didn't have to do that.
It's honestly not that far. It's only like, I want to say it's only like 3 or 4 miles. I guess I don't know what you're talking about, Midtown. No, if you're going to Manhattan, like Times Square, it's not that far. You have to go over the Brooklyn Bridge, so you get that experience as well. I think it might take like an hour and a half. Is it enough for a piece of pizza?
Cheesecake.
Sorry.
I mean, you know, if it's world famous cheesecake, maybe.
All right. There were a couple more here. What will be the biggest headline for this program in the offseason? That's from Thumbs Up Barry. Now, he offered a couple of options here. New coach, big addition / departure, any more secret tape recordings, something else. What do you got for the biggest headline this offseason?
I think the easy one is big addition / departure.
Okay.
I don't coach. And who knows who's recording who these days, but I think we laid out the potential for departures and people who may come in.
We did. I think that might be it. I know that there's a lot of people that are upset. And I know we talked about the game a little bit earlier. It was a disappointing result, especially what they had done the past weekend. And I get everyone being upset with Greg Gard, too. I completely understand it. My text messages from friends that I've had the last few weeks have been the exact same thing. So I understand the frustration. It just feels like a situation that's not going to if you're hoping that it's going to go that way, it's probably not going to go that way this season. And I also think there's probably a lot more people that are willing to give Greg Gard more time than the ones that are hitting my text messages and DMs. I don't know about you. I feel like there's quite a few people that do want to move on, but there's also ones that believe that Greg Gard can probably still get Wisconsin to a different place. That's where my question comes in here. And it is, has Greg Gard hit the ceiling for what he can bring to Wisconsin basketball?
I don't think so. I don't know how you
that,
can
say that was from Joseph, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know how you can say, you know, you're good enough to win 2 Big Ten regular season titles or at least share them. You're 2-time league coach of the year, which I get sometimes has to do with the expectations coming into the season. And we know a few years ago they were picked to finish 10th. But I do believe that everything that he's been able to do can translate to the NCAA tournament. Sometimes it just takes a year where you get the monkey off your back. I know there have been a lot of coaches who have been in roles similar to that, but I don't believe that he has hit his ceiling as a basketball coach at Wisconsin.
Do you believe the program has hit its ceiling post Bo Ryan?
Well, I feel like that's a deeper dive type of question. Does that mean it's a program that can't go to the Sweet 16? Like, what does that mean?
Well, I think it's can they get back to where they were with Bo Ryan, which was, especially the last 2 years, was playing for national getting in and potentially playing for national titles. Now, before those two runs, he was viewed not in a same manner because he had gone to an Elite Eight, he had been to a number of Sweet 16s, but he was viewed as a guy that could not get over the hump, right? Yeah. Like he was viewed as somebody like the game before or the year before they went on that run to the first Final Four was an absolute disaster of a 5-12 loss to Ole Miss where they could not hit the broadside of a barn. Like they were bad, like really, really bad. Now, how did that change? How did that go from that year to the next year where they were able to win games when scoring 190, 80, 70, 60, and 50 and 40? Well, they had Frank Kaminsky develop into a big time player. They got Josh Gosser back. Sam Decker was all of a sudden a whole much better. Ben Brust had a better season. Like you got Koenig and Hayes coming off the bench. Like those were the additions that made them a better team, but it was also improvement from within. But it's just a different situation and environment that they're in right now to hope that maybe something like that could happen next year. But it was the fact that they had a bunch of returning guys, but also guys are going to be in new roles. And I think that could be certainly the case for guys that are on this team. I just think because of the environment that we're in, it's going to be new guys coming in.
Yeah, my feeling when talking about this topic and thinking about it is just, I don't think it's fair to use Bo's last two full seasons as the barometer for what the ceiling should be or could be for Wisconsin. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously Chris McIntosh has talked about competing for championships, and that starts with the league, but national championships. Especially the last one, right? That was the generational team. It was a team I don't think we'll ever see again. You ended up with two first-round NBA draft picks. Like, when is the last time that's happened, and when will we see that again? And that doesn't mean you can't have success at the college level with guys who aren't NBA players, but that was really special. And I think it is fair to talk about where we are in college athletics with the portal and the way that changes things. And maybe that does sound like excuse making, but like, to retain all that talent and know if you got a guy, you were probably going to have him at the end of his career is just, it's so much harder to do that. And that's another wrinkle. And I know every other team in the country is dealing with it. So it's not like, oh, this is a mark on Wisconsin, but all these other teams don't have to deal with it. But I guess I think of the ceiling or what Wisconsin should be, maybe a little bit like football, although not entirely. Like, I don't expect a Sweet 16 every year, but you do expect that to happen at least every couple of years, because Wisconsin has the talent and the facilities and everything to be able to make that happen. So, yeah, I mean, when I think of the ceiling, I don't think like, well, this ought to be a Final Four team every X number of years, but I do feel like it's reasonable to get to that second weekend. And then obviously, I suppose anything can happen. I feel like most NCAA tournament games end up feeling like they're toss-ups, even these second round games, but you got to be able to get through that one game where you are just not very good if that's going to happen. And Wisconsin hasn't been able to do that.
Should expectations be more than one, you know, a Sweet 16 every 7 years?
Yeah, I think so.
He has not, the team under Greg Gard has now doubled that. Right. Like you said, every, you know, 2 to 3 years, and now it's been seven.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you expect more, and it's just so hard because I don't want to ignore all the other successes.
The regular season successes, right? Yeah.
Like, and it's a 20 game regular season. Like, my God, it's most of your year. So to have two regular season championships, that is a big deal. It's just that it always is going to pale in comparison to what you do in the NCAA tournament. And so we're having this conversation on the heels of a tremendously disappointing first round loss. And when those add up, the more they do, I think less capable you are of being willing to look past it, no matter what happens in the regular season.
When do you think it switched, or has it always been like this, where the regular season is fine, but the only thing we judge coaches on are what they do in March?
That's a really hard question, because I think every program is different. And I think the programs that consistently go to the NCAA tournament, it becomes more than just making it. Every program is different. And Northwestern's been to consecutive NCAA tournaments for the first time ever. So that is a massive deal. And the fact they can even win an NCAA tournament game is a massive deal. And I'm not saying Wisconsin and Northwestern are anywhere on the same level historically, but it's a matter of perspective and what your expectations are. But for a program like Wisconsin, that's just not going to be good enough.
Yeah, Northwestern was among the teams that I said would take in a second what Greg Gard has done in his tenure. And especially even the last 5 years, they would definitely take that. They would definitely take that, because yep. I don't know have they ever won a Big Ten title?
Northwestern?
Yeah. I have to look it up now, real quickly, but it is, yeah, they've won two regular season titles, 1931 and 1933.
It's been a while.
It has been. So they have never been to the Sweet 16. They, however, did win a national championship, the pre-tournament Helms champions. I believe Wisconsin has a football title like that too. 1931, they were national championships, according to Helms, as well as Primo Peretta, the champions in 1931. So congratulations to them. And what was, I'm sure, just a dynamite team for Arthur Longborg and company down there in Evanston. So yes. All right. Well, this has been fun. We know that there's going to be more that's happening. If something major happens, we'll certainly do an episode of The Swing, you know, here as we get into April and into May. We also have Temple and Heilprin coming up on Thursday. We're back at Monk's. We've missed the last 2 weeks because we've both been on the road, but we'll be back out there in Sun Prairie. Stop out, see us, come by, watch. They play, yeah. Come by, watch some tournament games that night, and should be a good time. Jesse, thank you. Also, obviously, spring ball. They're off this week, be back next week. We'll have a full coverage of that with our podcast, The Camp, as well. So, Jesse, thank you very much for all season coming on and talking Wisconsin basketball.
Yep, thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is, Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Swing.